Blog Hi, everyone, Talk and Radio. Welcome.
Okay. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Murder 123. I think we've got our big fearless leader back. John, are you there? Well, maybe not. He should be with us shortly. Joining me is Tony Filozzi.
Hello, Robin.
How are you doing, Tony?
Oh, I'm great. I'm great to speak.
I'm good. We had a lot of fun recording Murder 123 the other day, didn't we?
Yes, we did. That was a fun podcast. I hope we do many more of those.
I did, too. That was our first live one, so and it went really well. I want to be sure and tell all of our listeners some of the fun things that went on. Because it was live, there were things that the listeners missed out on, and a lot of crazy things that were absolutely happening while we were there that members of the audience were able to hear and see that unfortunately the listeners couldn't pick up on.
Well, like,
well, we were sitting there, and when we first started talking, Lavina had been mind speaking with myself and with my friend Janice Carter, who was there as a guest host as well. And she had been talking. Well, once we got talking with the audience and had gone live, I don't know if anybody could hear it, but she was coming through the speakers. Like you could hear words being said, you could hear her voice in the
back of the speaker.
And the speaker was right behind Jan and I. Absolutely,
she was, and I finally got a copy of that file. It's a WAV file. I've just got to, you know, convert it so that it's easier for people to hear, and I'm going to put it up on the server, and as soon as we're done, I'm going to do that, and I'm telling you, Lavinia Fisher was there.
Now,
well, absolutely.
That's
for everybody who doesn't know, Dr. John Staney is back with us. Welcome back, John.
Thank you very much. I had to take a quick break, and we're back. But, yeah, I'll tell you what, Lavinia Fisher was there, number one. And number two, I was to be honest with you, the reason that the file is not up is I listened to like a third of it. It was actually a lot of fun. And so if everyone let's put this way, if you'd forgive me, I'll have the file up right after this show, which is, the one and only Murder 123, and our focus tonight is Tony Filozzi, and he is going to talk about the cell block. And Tony, tell us about the cell block tonight.
The cell block tonight is going to focus on a double murder in Harlan County, in downtown Harlan. And what I'll start out by with is read just a short synopsis of it in the Chicago Tribune, because what a lot of people don't realize is that back in the 40s, 50, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and maybe even 60s, that the Chicago Tribune and other news outlets had field offices that reported regularly on happenings in Harlan County. So let's get started with this. This is from the Chicago Tribune, April 26, 1951.
Okay, we're ready.
Right. Two slayings robbed Bloody Harlan of two records. Spoil, clean slate, two cops seized. Now, what that means is involved in this slaying of ex-policemen were current policemen, and they all served on the same force together. So this happened April 25th, 1951. Two former Harlan City policemen were shot to death in downtown streets here last night. Six men, including two on the police force, were arrested and charged with murder. The slayings shattered the circuit court's hopes of setting a record for Bloody Harlan County. For the term of court starting May 7th, not a single murder case had been docketed. It would have been the first term without a murder since 1819. Now imagine that is a long run.
That sure is.
Victims of
Tony, I'm sorry, I don't believe that. I don't believe that there was such a long time that there were murders. I think Harlan County I hope you don't mind me saying this, might be the murder central station of America.
At one time, it very possibly could.
And so, you know, right, but I hope you don't mind me saying that, but here's the deal. Harlan County, Kentucky has got so much history. And, you know, we can pretend and say, well, nothing happened for 40, 50, 60, how many ever years, but it did. And that's one reason that you and your organization are up there investigating the paranormal incidences and murders. And we've got you as a fixture on Murder 123 because things happened up there. I'll let you continue, Tony.
Okay. But now, this was, it started, the year started out fine. I actually have access to the records, like the jailer's records and things like that. I was able to save some of those several years ago. And it started out kind of quiet, but let me tell you, there was, whenever they would bring an inmate in, and put them in jail, their charge, you know, on the jailer's record, it would be like John Doe charged public drunkenness, posted bottle, and kind of what happened to him just in a few sentences. There were, I bet you, a dozen murders, documented murders, in 1951. And the population was starting to decline. But what was unusual about these murders, guys, is the two fellows that we're about to talk about seem to have been basically murder for hire folks that were taking care of dirty work for the local police force and some of the politicians. And we'll get more into that here just in a minute. But the victims of the lady shootings were Avery Hensley, 45, and his stepson Joe Hensley, 26, a truck driver. Now both these fellows, the year before, were members of the Harlan Police Department, Harlan City Police Department. Arrested, charged.
Both of them were.
Yes, both of them were.
Oh wow.
And whenever they resign, a year later, they're dead. And I actually have photographs of some of these guys mentioned in my historic photos. Some of these people mentioned in this article.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yes.
Somebody didn't want the information they learned of being on the police force out.
Well, and that's, I think, hit right on the nail on the head, Robin. Back in the day, liquor worldwide has been a big business, you know, forever. But especially in Harlan County, those who controlled the liquor trade prospered greatly. So the two guys that murdered, they were the Beach Brothers, and the two guys that murdered the Avery and Joe Hensley owned a small cafe, but they also had been arrested numerous times for bootlegging and for little to no time. So my thoughts are that they are the ones distributing the illegal liquor. They're in part of that network. Now, the previous year, they had murdered another policeman. His name was Ford. And had gotten away with the crime, and they had claimed self-defense. Well, the jury was bought off, and they had gotten away with another the previous year, and had been accessories in several more. And the more I dug into this, the more that it became apparent that Cloud and Wheeler Beach were nothing but Harlan County's murder for hire, Murder Inc., because they were. Go ahead.
Yes, Robin.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, I didn't mean to interrupt you guys. Sorry. I was thinking, I was just like, maybe that's why it said there was no murders, because nobody was convicted. They got them all off. There was plenty of murders, but because it was all based in mafia ran or police ran, however you want to list it, nobody was getting convicted. So maybe that's why all
that's
the records say that. I mean,
that's true.
To me, that
that's
would tell
true.
Me why it doesn't list anybody's not been murdered there.
And that's a very good point. And this tells you how corrupt, even up into the. I mean, this is stuff that. That movies were made up. You really wouldn't believe that, you know, people were civilized. Well, apparently not.
Right.
In downtown Harlem. But Abraham Hensley was killed. He was shot by one of the Beach Brothers from a recessed doorway. His back was turned to Avery Beach. Avery Hensley's back was turned to one of the Beach Brothers. He shot him twice in the back. He fell down. He wasn't dead. He grabbed his gun, which had a locked cylinder, and that's unusual for a revolver. But the cylinder was locked up and it wouldn't fire. So Avery walks up, Claude walks up to him. And shoots him four more times in the chest and abdomen. He shot him a total of six times. So he was, I think an example. He was sent a message because you don't shoot a person. This is just right after dark, and you got plenty of street lights. I know right about where this happened at because it was one of the stops. On my ghost walk, the ghost walk tour in the fall. And so you had plenty of lighting and cafe that was open really close to where the man went down. So he shoots him in the back from across the street, walks up, shoots him four more times in the abdomen. Avery's stepson, Joseph, runs up. He hears the shooting. He runs up. He picks up the pistol that he doesn't know won't fire, and he chases his stepdad's murderer two blocks trying to get the gun to go off, trying to shoot this man. When his brother pulls up, Claude's brother, Wheeler Beach, pulls up, opens the door to the vehicle. He jumps in. They take off. They get away. Well, Joseph goes back to his stepdad's body. He's not dead. He gets him some help. They take him a couple of blocks to the hospital. He dies there about 3 hours after he's shot. Approximately 3 hours after he's shot, he dies. Avery stays with him, Joe stays with Avery a little while longer. He leaves. He's taking a bus home. Well, the murderers know that that Joseph can identify him. Plus, he probably has some information, like you were saying, Robin, that they didn't want to get out. Besides,
exactly.
They
would have been exposed to so much information while working there. And
exactly.
If the police department was that corrupt, they're not going to want that out.
Right, and it was not only exposed to the police department, but the politicians or the money men who were pulling the strings. So, you know, one policeman was killed, murdered the previous year for getting out of line. Now, you have Avery Hensley that's assassinated on the street. Then you have Joe Hensley that's waiting at a bus stop around 1 or 2 in the morning. And guess what happens to Joe Hensley?
What?
One of the Wheeler brothers, or Beach brothers, walk up and fire a single round into his skull, killing him instantly.
Oh, my God. Ugh.
And he drops dead.
Oh, my God, how horrible.
Now, I'll just read you a little little paragraph about the killing the previous year of the policeman. The Beach brothers said they've been formerly friendly with the Hensleys, had a turbulent career here. They were tried and acquitted in the slaying May 8, 1950, by policeman James Ford. They were accused but not indicted. And that goes along with what Robin was saying about people were being killed, but the murderers weren't being indicted. They were they killed James Ford in 1950. They also killed a fellow by the name of C.D. Benji, a mechanic. They shot him 15 times on the street.
Talk about overkill.
Apparently, yeah, apparently this guy had fought back, and there had been a gun. It was indicated for the gun was a gun battle in the street, and the mechanic was shot 15 times by these two fellas.
Can I say something about that getting shot that many times? And this is just my own personal observation. You know, if you're somebody, and obviously you're trying to kill somebody, I can see, you know, a couple of shots, maybe even four. But to sit there and just one after another and pump 15 shots in there, that changes the entire mindset of how evil that person is, as far as I'm concerned, because you're already at a certain level of evil when you're killing somebody. I mean, you just are. But when you go and see that they're already down, but yet you continue to pull that trigger, the amount of hatred and anger that must be in that person would be astronomical.
Well, you have to figure that they were using six shooters. They were probably using revolvers. So they had to theory that somebody reloaded or had a spare gun, or there were three shooters. So somebody, I mean, to get 15 rounds in a guy, you had to completely empty your gun three times.
Yeah.
You know, almost, you know, with 12, you know, one or two and a half times. So that guy.
I didn't close my mind.
Guys,
I mean,
those
to me,
guys,
that just changes the whole insight to that person.
It does. Because they basically, I think the brothers both were in on that killing, and they both emptied their pistols into this guy. I mean, like you said, what are they thinking? You know, what's their
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be funny, but talk about overkill.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Really, dead is dead. I mean, I'm not trying to be funny, but talk
right.
about your overkill. You
right,
know,
right. Well,
and it's like, good Lord.
Right. Well, that's what they were gunning for, Rob. You know, no pun intended.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just
saying.
I mean, you're already a bad enough person to take a human life, but then when you just continue, it's like, all right, you've already taken that life. How many times are you going to take it? You know, now you're just shooting for the sake of shooting.
Right, right. Now, I think these guys were enforcers of some sort, and they were employed to set bloody examples, you know, by whomever. I think it went way beyond the police force.
Oh, absolutely.
Because if it didn't, then when they killed that officer the previous year, self-defense plea or not, they're going to prison.
Right.
So somebody, when one of the policemen or somebody had too much information or talked too much, got out of line,
yeah,
the Beach Brothers were the ones that they sent. So, but fast forward just about a month, and the shooter was Claude Beach, and the driver of the car was Wheeler Beach. But there, what's funny about this, it's in the six, in some of the documents I found, it's like their wives were indicted maybe as accessories. I don't think they got it.
Oh, wow.
Time, but it was, yeah.
Oh, my
yeah.
Lord.
And that's also in the jailer's records. And so, but.
Talk about your family business.
Yeah, yeah. But Claude Beach got life in prison. I'm not sure what his brother Wheeler got, But Claude was sentenced to life in prison for the murder of those two fellas. But I'm sure that Wheeler was involved. You know, I mean, he was driving the car, and I was saying, and you know, I'm sure he helped assassinate Joseph Hensley. So, but what are your thoughts on that before we close this segment of Murder 1-2 or Cell Block Day?
I think
Robin, if you don't mind, tell us what you think.
I just think that to begin with, you're talking about a city that is actually so corrupt that they're really, it's basically a mob-based town. You can call them the police departments, you can call it what you want, but it's run like the mob. So they're going to do whatever they want to do and how they want to do it, and that's just the way it is, and people can either suck it up or leave. And that's kind of where it's at. But when you get to these people, and I have to say it again, it the mindset of this, when they have to shoot and shoot and shoot, I mean, they already know the man's dead, but yet let's just keep pumping full of bullets. To me, that changes things because it's bad enough and you're a bad enough person to kill somebody, but now you're getting to that, now you're just doing it because you want to watch it happen. And to me, that tells me that this person that was already evil and not mentally right to begin with is actually much sicker than we thought. Or the head bosses that were running this was much more severe than what originally may have been thought about as well. And then you talk about the families being involved. Well, you know, generally, you know, the wives knew what their husbands were doing, or even if they didn't, they were automatically implicated because they were with the husband. I mean, even if they wouldn't have done anything, they're going to be implicated because they were there.
Right. Right. I mean, to me, it seems like that I think you're right. This is something that you would think of in Chicago or not small towns.
Absolutely.
Murders in the streets. You know, just hits, just blatant hits that, you know, to send a message to everybody else to keep in line. This is happening in 1951.
But, Tony, when we were talking about the Al Capone case, we were talking about how a lot of these big mobsters that really were in Chicago, Detroit, that kind of thing, they had these other houses in all these small towns where nobody's going to find them. So is there a possibility that maybe that's the same thing in this case, only this is the second area that they've got a hold on, and maybe they're running liquor or whatever they're doing, but, you know, maybe expanding the area, so to speak?
Well, I can tell you for sure and certain that Harlan County had a definite mob presence in it that lasted up into the 50s or 60s.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, that's true.
Because even like, let's say you're in big business and you've got a really great company going. If you're doing that great, you're going to expand. You're going to continually expand because the better you do, the bigger you want to be. So they're in you know, Chicago, Detroit, wherever, and they can't stay there all the time. It's going to get too hot there. You know, everybody's going to be looking for them, and there's going to be too many altercations. So they're going to leave maybe some top people there, but then they're going to go off to a new location and get started there too. And some of these smaller towns back then would have been perfect.
Right.
And you know, Robin, you had a real good thought there. Because I can tell you that Harlan, Kentucky, and Johnson City, Tennessee, were absolute perfect for these guys that wanted to do bad things. Because, I mean, you know, you're talking about towns that have a little bit of size, but they don't really want to have problems. So they'll kind of let things happen. Now Tony, does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I think they're going to run it with an iron fist because they're going to want to come in there and continue the illegal activities. And these people weren't prepared for that. I think they would come in, run it with an iron fist before these people had a chance to say boo, and then they've got control of yet another town.
And the interesting thing is, even though that Claude killed this guy in you know, it wasn't broad daylight, but it was plenty of witnesses. He pulled a little less than 10 years, and was paroled. Now, how do you murder? How do you do that? How does that happen?
Because you have a
unless,
judge in your pocket.
It, right, unless that you know somebody or you know something on somebody. But he pulled the minimum amount of time before he could be paroled for murder one.
Yeah.
And got out.
So that means that they owned everything, including the judges. And
they
probably
got him out.
And even if he was in jail, he probably got preferential treatment because they owned all that too.
And I'm going to try to get support documents on these two guys. But the newspaper articles, there was another murder really close to where they killed Avery 10 years later. I also did that on my ghost walk. But one of the guys that was killed in that, it's a long story with that one, but he was killed within, I don't know, 50 yards. 60 yards where Avery Hensley was killed, and he was loosely associated with the killing of the Hensleys as some sort of lookout, and he had claimed he got hit over the head or something like that. But when you start digging into this, all these folks, I mean, violence was definitely a business. A big business in Harlan at that time.
I feel bad for the people that were there before they all got there. You know, I mean, the original people that settled in that town, they didn't stand a chance. But they're not going to report any deaths or any murders because they aren't convicting anybody.
Right. And then when the police force is, you know, backing this up and assassinating their own, I mean, what can the general public expect? You know, whenever they go on the witness stand, they try to stop this stuff.
Well, they're too afraid to speak.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're probably threatened before they ever get that far. But if the police are killing their own, they don't stand a chance. I mean, I wouldn't go up there and rat somebody else if I knew that as soon as I did it, I was going to end up in a box.
No,
you know, I mean,
no.
I wouldn't do it. So, I mean, you can't convict anybody between the judges on the payroll and the witnesses too terrified to speak. It was just anybody could do what they wanted to do.
Now, just as a side note, the same fella that prosecuted Claude Beach is the same person that prosecuted Manzo Shepherd, just as a sidebar.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that's interesting.
I mean, though, how much more interesting could it be than, you know, Manzo Shepherd is incredible. You prosecuted him.
Yep. Commonwealth attorney was Daniel Boone Smith. He prosecuted Manzo, and he also prosecuted Claude Beach. So I thought that was interesting. I don't think it's, you know, in any way related that Daniel Boone Smith was on tape or nothing. I just think it was just interesting.
It really is.
Would you not love to talk to Daniel Boone Smith and good Lord, what went on? I mean, here's the guy that prosecuted a lot of high-profile cases.
And see, so I would be the weird one. That the first thing I asked him is, I want all the little details that nobody else wanted. Because you know what? In all those little details that everybody skips over and doesn't want to know because it's not the main thing, that's where the truth lies.
Yeah. Yes, I'm going to dig a little bit deeper on Daniel Boone Smith. And I'm sure there's stuff out there on him. I'm hoping he's written some book or he's a chapter or two in some of But people have written several books on Harlan County history, but they're really hard to find. and they didn't get much play outside of the local area. So I'm hoping I can come across one of those, and maybe he's mentioned or he's spoken to someone about the trials that he's prosecuted.
Oh, yeah. That would be very interesting.
Yes, it would.
Daniel Boone Smith.
Yes, Daniel Boone Smith. Is that not an unusual name?
It's a great name.
Yeah.
Old Daniel Boone, buddy, he prosecuted some of the toughest. But what really blows my mind is this was going on in the 1950s. When you think about the 1950s, what do you think about? You think about B-movies, like sci-fi movies and B-movies and, the American Dream and stuff like that. You don't think about it. I mean, it's not like in Harlan County, you better watch out where you step because you're liable to get in the middle of a gun battle.
Huh.
Wow. Still still pretty barbaric here. So that's what I have for you guys tonight on Murder 1, 2, 3.
That was excellent. Thank you.
Have any observations or any questions, just feel free to throw them at me. We'll do our best.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
Thank you.
Just amazing to me, the level of corruption, even back then.
And the same guy prosecutes Mando Shepard and prosecutes these other guys. And then, in my mind, I'm looking at, all these other murders that I'm finding in the jailer book. This gentleman that's becoming more and more interested, Daniel Boone Smith, prosecuted those also.
I tell you what, that prosecutor, I would love to be able to talk to him.
I'm gonna start doing some serious research on him because he's one. I believe he's gonna be probably one interesting character.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. This is Dr. John. I'm going to stop all of this. I believe that Harlan County, Kentucky is, without a doubt, the most murder-filled county on the East Coast. Now, Tony, I know you've never done any statistics on this, but would you agree with me? It might be one of the most murder-filled counties on the East Coast, yes or no?
It ranks right up there. It didn't get its name Bloody Harlem for nothing. It was well deserved.
Yep, it was.
There were so many murders and so much violence. I mean, nationally, it was known as Bloody Harlem.
Oh, wow.
All right. Well, thank you. Now, Robin, you are totally an intuitive. Do you feel that Harlan County is, without a doubt, one of the most frightening places to have ever lived?
Yeah, I mean, there is so much dark energy there. I mean, to the point where even if someone was good, if they were easily influenced, that dark energy could turn them and push it that way. And I think, there's been a lot of things that have happened since then, obviously. But that much that went on there, that would have affected everything, even in the future. I'm not saying it's not a lovely place now. I'm just saying that with that kind of energy there, it does. It gets into the earth because the earth is energy-based. And it can do some serious damage, and it can stay there. And the spirits alone that are probably there are just unbelievable.
I was having that conversation with John today about people don't realize how active Harlan County is as far as spiritual, entities.
I'm still going to take you up, Tony, on coming there because I can't wait to get there and see what happens.
Oh, we'd love to have you. I'll give you a tour. I mean, I really.
I know. I'm looking forward to it.
I really want you to work that courthouse with me. I really do.
Well, I'm gonna jump in here and I'm gonna say, we are going to schedule in February a trip to Harlan County, Kentucky. Robin, are you okay with that?
Okay. Sounds good to me.
Tony, is that okay?
Yeah.
We'll schedule it in February.
And then if you're up for it, we'll see. I mean, we'll try to work out the details. What about doing I wonder if the folks would be interested in a Facebook Live or something from the courtroom. Would that not be awesome?
That would be great. Yep, I think that would be good.
Tony, I'm going to say it won't be awesome. It will be very real. I hope you don't mind that. It will be totally real, and it will be frightening. It won't be awesome. It will be frightening. Are you okay with that?
Oh, yeah. It's part of what I do.
And we're so lucky to have you here as part of Murder 123 and doing the cell block tonight because, you know, you just do so much research. And, you know,
fantastic.
And when I looked at everything, I realized that Tony Filosi in Harlan, Kentucky might be the center of the universe in paranormal and horrible activities that ever happened. So, I'm sorry. You're like, we love you because you're in the worst town in America, but that's okay.
Now, we just love Tony because he's Tony.
Exactly.
Now, there's another
place.
Do what, Tony? I want to take y'all, if we have time, to admire that there's a lot of activity. Would you be interested in going into a haunted coal mine that's been converted over to a tourist attraction?
Oh, wow.
Well, I say, we certainly do have a little bit of time, so if you want to, you know, talk about this, and because we talked about it before, but it, you know, we certainly have a little bit of time. In fact, we got 52 minutes, so let us know.
Well, I want to, too, before we get off, we need to talk a little bit more about this Lavinia, because there are some things that went on that need to be told to our listening audience, because they were not able to physically watch it while we were there.
All right, so let's do that, because I tell you what, the Lavinia Fisher thing, I will say that Lavinia didn't do it. Lavinia may have been, you know, kind of not a nice person, but I'll tell you what, she did not do any of these things that were attributed to her. Robin, do you mind like sharing those with us?
Number one, like I said before, Jan and I were both getting, you know, messages from her in our heads. And so we had that going on, and she was very adamant about a lot of things. I don't think she was the nicest gal around. I think she was the complete terminology of the word broad in those days. I think she had quite the mouth on her, and she liked things her way, and she was very agitated now and then. However, when all that went down and they said, oh, yeah, we did it, they thought if they said they did it, it would blow over, it would be over with, it would be done. Didn't mean they did it. They just wanted the whole mess over, and it got them notoriety, which would have been great for business, even, you know, from the ghost seekers and everything else. The truth of the matter is she didn't do it. They couldn't find anything to tie her to the murder, but the government already had it set up that she was going down, and that's what they did. But... and this is the part that, in fact, Jan and I were talking about this today. Well, we were doing this, and as I started to say at the beginning of the show, we were getting vocals from her coming out of the speakers. And Jan and I were sitting in front of the speakers, and what we heard coming out was matching what we were being told in our mind. So that was the first thing. Actually, it was two things. First, we were mind speaking with her. Second, she's got her voice coming out of the speaker. So now if that isn't enough, the lights are flipping on and off. Now, I was there all day long. I got there at 10 o'clock in the morning and left at 6 o'clock at night. There were no light problems. And the rest of the building was perfectly fine. It was only in the lights directly above us while we were speaking, and they would shut off, they'd shut on, they'd shut off, they'd shut on. You know, anybody, and Tony knows this, John, I know you know this, you know, ghosts draw energy. They pull energy. All right? Light bulbs are energy.
Absolutely.
So they're pulling that energy from it, which shuts the bulb out. They relax it, the bulb's back on. And then the next one that was just astonishing to me, while we were sitting there, of course, it's decorated for the holiday season, and it looked lovely, is the 6.5-foot-tall robotic Santa. And it's one of the air ones that blow up and fill with air, and he's waving, and he's got his, you know, his Santa suit on and everything, and it was just absolutely adorable. The kids that were coming in and out of there all went up and looked at him and talked to him. Some touched him. That Santa stood there all day, tall and proud, didn't fall, didn't waver, just kept on waving and doing his thing. We get started on this, and it's going great. And as soon as we started getting the light flickering, as soon as we started getting the vocals coming out of that speaker, that Santa Claus went straight down, face first on the ground. And the timing of it was perfect because she was getting very agitated. She kept telling me, she said, you know what, you're never going to get the whole truth. The truth died when I did. And she was actually quite cocky about it. You know, it's like, fine, screw you guys. This is what happened to me. Now this, you're not going to find out either. But I don't think she did it. I think she did a lot of terrible things. I think her husband did too. I think she was the mastermind between her and her husband. I do not believe that she did the things they're accusing her from. They said that, you know, she put oleander tea and, you know, which is toxic and made people, you know, fall asleep so then she could murder them. And they had these, you know, dungeons down there with trap doors. And they never found the tea. They never found the dungeons. They never found anything that they could have even used to kill. But yet they were prosecuted and they were hung. There was just, it was a, you know, for what looked on the outside again, and we find this with a lot of the murders we look at, John and Tony, you both know it. It always starts out where it's just a simple, clear-cut case. It's this, 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 this. Okay, they were proven guilty. This is why. But when we start picking off those layers, we find out it's a whole different ballgame. And that's the same thing that happened with her, but she was there. She was absolutely there that day, and everybody could feel her because they all got a creepy feeling on top of it. And this poor Santa that was standing beautifully all day long, he went flying right on the ground, face first. He still stayed blown up. It wasn't that he deflated. The mechanics, he was still making the mechanics while he was down, but every time anybody would sit him up, he'd go right straight to the ground. And once we were done with the show and everything had settled down, they stood him up again, and he never moved.
Wow.
And the lights everywhere else in that building were perfectly fine except directly over where we were sitting, and they kept going on and off. And the only time they went on and off is when she was talking through that speaker. So there's actually a lot going on that day. You could feel her presence, not so much her husband. I think he was a lot more meek and mild and passive, and he was one that she told what to do, and he did. I mean, she was the one that ran the place, and she was not a happy woman. She wasn't angry at us. She was just angry in general.
We will have, you know, certainly within a few minutes of this podcast, we will have that entire entire broadcast.
Podcast,
and you
yeah.
can listen to it. Absolutely. You can listen to it. It'll be great. I mean, it'll be wonderful. So, everything, some very strange things were happening. And we're just lucky that we did it. And we're frankly lucky. I'm going to say this, don't care. We're lucky that Lavinia Fisher showed up with us. She cared.
Yeah.
And she frankly found out that she's got some fans that do not believe that she killed people. We don't believe that.
I don't either. And if you look and you read about her, it says in there how she had said, if you have a message for the devil, I'll take it to him, and, you know, at the bottom of it. I'm going to be honest. I don't believe that was ever said. According to her, it was never said. She said, why would I say such a thing? Why would I even want to be with the devil? Which, considering the life that she led, she probably was going there anyway. But regardless, she didn't say it, according to her.
Well,
I'll
tell you what.
About what part of the podcast does the audio clip come out? I can take that file and I can use program that I have, and I could pull the EVP out of her coming through the speakers.
Tony, it was probably within the first 5 minutes that the show started, and it went on and off through the whole thing. At first, everybody thought maybe it was where it was hung up on your end because we had the mic to you on Skype, but it absolutely wasn't. We were picking out words here and there. And it was really odd because you would have thought we would have been talking about it more on the broadcast, and we really weren't because we were trying to get the information out about it, and then all these crazy things were going at the same time, and we were trying to find out exactly what was going on, you know, because we didn't want to misquote something. We didn't want to say something that wasn't accurate. And all these crazy things are going on, and then she's also in my mind and in Janice's mind talking away. And it was kind of like just overload. But, yeah, I mean, that went on probably within 5 minutes after it started, Tony, and it continued. And it did it even when you weren't talking. That's what the thing that was so bizarre. You know, so it didn't – we thought at first it was coming off of your mic, not you personally, but the mic.
Right.
But it was still doing it. And then as we listened, the more we listened to it, the more words were pronounced.
Well, there's no reason that couldn't happen because entities can use electronic equipment to manifest their voices, like the box and different apps and things like that. So that's not out of the realm of possibility that she was, if the lights were flickering and you were having other electronic problems, that
right.
she made her, I mean, she, you know, she manifested her voice. You know, that's not out of the realm of possibility.
Oh, no, not at all. I had that happen with a little girl ghost that was in my house, and she liked my cat. And I knew the cat knew she was there because this cat would look up at her, and then it would follow her all around. And it would stop, and it would position itself like a cat when it arches its back if someone's petting it. And yet you
right.
couldn't see anybody there. And so we did one of the EVP readings on it, and she was talking on it. And she said, oh, she liked the cat. It was a pretty cat. She liked to pet it because it was soft and she's only about 5 years old. It was really cute. I need to do an EVP here at the house because we've got an older gentleman and we've got a young girl here as well.
And
well,
yes, you do, because I have seen them and it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
If you go ahead, if you do the session and send me the audio file, I'll go through that. I'll go through the audio file.
Oh, that would be great. That would be wonderful.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tony, I've got actually the WAV file from Somerville Comic-Con where we had our Murder 123. I'm going to send that to you tonight, and I'd love for you to take a look at it, okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not a problem. Now, Robin was talking about the light flickering, and that is not an unusual thing. Whenever
no.
spirits are trying to manifest. About
yep.
3 weeks ago, we were doing, I had some folks in, I was doing a tour, you know, to look at the possibility of getting some tourism tours going to some of these locations.
Yeah.
And we were doing an EVP session back in the mines, I was telling you about, and we turned our lights out. Dark in the mines, there was no lights on the mines. We had flashlights and things. So we turned our lights out, and I started telling the miners that our batteries had died and we were lost and we couldn't find our way back outside. Now, I did that about, and then we didn't, you know, I didn't get anything. EVPs to the ghost box, and I beat it to death. No pun intended. But so we start walking, and we're going to go to this cross section. You come down towards the tracks. You can keep going straight down the tracks and go out to the outside, fire to the right, go across the section and go into the other part of the mine. We had no intentions of going outside. We just told the entities that to try to get them to interact with us. So we start bearing to the right, and on the wall on the left is an emergency light. Now, remember, all the lights are out. That light starts flickering.
showing us the way out. So, like, as I said before, I've physically seen entities manipulate lies trying to communicate, and they absolutely can and will do it.
Wow, Tony, that's so very interesting. Robin, do you have any comments to make on that?
No, I think this whole, I love it. Tony comes up with some great stuff, and the thing I love best about Tony's information is, number one, it's thorough. Like, he does his homework, he does his research, he's phenomenal at it. But he brings it out in a way that it makes you think. You know, it makes you think about the other things that are going on as to why. It's not just he says the words and it's over and done with. I love the way he puts it, because he's not, like I said, he digs, he gets the truth, he knows it. He's not guessing it. He knows what went on because he knows all the facts and he's done his homework. And it makes it easy for you as a listener to look at the overall picture and start, you can pick out facts on your own because Tony's done such a good job of getting the research out.
Yep. Well, I appreciate that. But now the point to the mind story was they manipulated those lies. That was just 3 weeks. You know, it's not something that happened once, twice. I mean, I've seen it several times. But you know, and we're talking about Lavinia. There's not a doubt in my mind that she's probably manipulated that, because they'll manipulate those the lies for several reasons. The biggest reason, the two biggest ones, is they're pulling energy and they're trying to get your attention. So
right.
Was pulling,
well, they do.
Was pulling energy.
We haven't do that here. It's definitely not like a power surge. We have things move across the counter. We have things flicker on and off. I mean, it's just constant. And they do. And there is no doubt in my mind, heart, or soul, she was there the other day.
And you hit on a good point, Rob. It's not like a power that all of a sudden light comes on. It's a buildup. Until somebody really sees it, you know, they can picture it, but it's totally different than a power surge, like your light flickers on off. It's just like a switch. It's a buildup. It's like if it's a 100-watt bulb, you'll have 20 watts of power, 40 watts of power, 60 watts of power, 100 watts of power per second, then 80 and 60 and 20 and all. And you can tell that it's something that comes in and, you know, it's not strong enough to pop the turn light on like you turn a switch on. And you got 100, you know, watts of light. It's like increment.
Right.
It's pushing, and it can only hold it for a second, then it weakens down, then goes off. So, and it's a shuddering type. I guess, but you know what I'm talking about when I say that it looks like it kind of shudders? It's building up. It's just a real unusual. When you see it, you'll never forget it, and people will understand what we're talking about. But it's an unusual phenomenon, but it's not that unusual. You know, if you do this a while,
right,
you'll see it. And but that really grabbed me whenever you were talking about the lights flickering on and off and the EVPs coming through the speakers. I mean, she had some power. She was amped up. She wanted to be heard.
She sure did. She sure did.
And tell me again about the feelings. Say you got like a feeling of, like a creeped out feeling, or a feeling of, was it a feeling of dread?
Yeah, I mean,
or was
we
it
didn't.
Thought, was it heavy or what?
Yeah, I mean, you could feel that there's an energy switch in it, you know, and that's what you can pick up on. Now, I mean, it didn't frighten Jan or I. I mean, this kind of stuff we've done a million times, so that part wasn't
right.
The issue. It was just people really and truly were like, I mean, you should have seen the people there were looking up at the ceiling and they're watching the lights flicker and then the Santa Claus is falling over. And they're like, why is he even down? Because nobody was near him. He was still working. He was still filled with air. And the speaker's making noises. And I think it was almost like an overload. And people are like, oh, my God, what's going on? And then you look out in the room and you're away from the area where we're doing this and everything's perfectly normal. There's no energy fluxes. There's no nothing. But we could feel it. We could feel that change in the energy from her. You know, it was a little bit heavier because she was irritated.
She was putting off a bunch of EMF
to
manipulate the ice and everything. That's what they were feeling was in that EMF energy coming off of all of that. And that's not, that is a classic manifestation deal there. I mean, if you, and I know that you all have experienced this, it's like there's nothing, then all of a sudden it's like a spike in static electricity or EMF, and hairs will stand up on your arms, and something's there with you. Some sort of energy is there that wasn't there 2 minutes before.
And it wasn't. The heaviness in the air was not there when we started.
And that's where people will start, you know, they'll say, I felt like I walked a spider web before. It feels like, and you'll get static spots. And I know you know what I'm talking about, Rob.
Oh, yeah.
But you'll get static spots. You can wave your hand through, and we'll say directly in front of you in a foot and a half radius. It's like the hair on your arms will stand up, and you move it a foot to the right, and there's nothing.
Exactly.
And you're not standing, and either you're in low light or the lights are off. There's no reason for it to be doing that, you know. So I mean, like I said, you know, that's pretty impressive. I mean, for her to be able to manipulate all that energy, and that tells you that she has a lot to say. I wouldn't care.
Oh, yeah. She could have gone on all day. And she was still talking when we got home.
Where did they hang her? Do y'all know the location that she was hung?
No, tell us about that.
I don't think we ever had that, didn't you?
No, huh?
John, did you know it?
I did not know. So, Tony, tell us about that.
No, I'm asking the question. I want to try to find what she was hung at, see if it's still, you know, maybe get close to the location. And if we're, you know, I wouldn't care. I mean, I'm real interested in Olivia right now.
I'm sorry. Are you talking about Lavinia? Yeah, Lavinia was hung in downtown Charleston. What happened was they transported Lavinia and John down there to Market Street, and that's where they hung people. And it was an absolute, it was a crazy, crazy deal, because, you know, a lot of people did not, you know, a lot of people thought that they did terrible things. So what they did was they hung them on Market Street. They put the masks on them so that you couldn't see their faces. They hung both of them. Actually, they hung Lavinia first. And frankly, when they hung Lavinia, they should never, according to law at that time, and I've got a fellow.
I'm sorry.
Are you there?
Hold on.
John? I think we lost John.
I think we did, but is that not unusual to lose John talking about Lavinia?
I know. It's just always a surprise for us, I think. She did a lot. Like, it was amazing because, like I said, we had more interaction with her that day than I think we have had with any of the cases we talked about so far. Like, we've always had during going through all these cases, you know, Manzo Shepherd came forward, Chris Benoit came forward. I mean, really, all of them have, as we've talked about it. But she went above just doing the mind speak. I mean, she made sure there was physical things that were going on that everybody could see.
Right. And you know, she's mad. They stole her land, accused of a crime she didn't commit, and then hung her over it. So she wanted her story told.
Absolutely. I mean, it was crazy.
I would be interested in someday going to Market Street, if we could get close to where she was hung at, and run an EVP section there and see what we get.
Well,
yeah,
I certainly hope that.
Can you
hear me back now?
I don't
know what happens when we start talking about Vinnie Fisher, but I just always like it just drops off. Anyway, where were we? Lavinia Fisher was hung before her husband, and according to the law at that time, that should never have happened. And I've got a new buddy named Chris, and I'm going to have him on here next week. He lives in the old village of Mount Pleasant. He is an absolute super scholar on all this. And Chris has told me that he wants to come and talk about it, because I'm telling you.
Wonderful.
The entire Lavinia Fisher thing was such, it was all about, it was a property grab. And I'm telling you, we're going to have him on here, and it's going to be unbelievable. And of course, Tony and Robin, you'll certainly be here with us when we have him here, right?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Wouldn't miss it.
Yep. So we'll have him here, and it's going to be unbelievable. So I'm glad both of you stayed on there. Robin, I want to ask you something. This is very important.
Sure.
Who is it that stops me from talking? Who does this?
I actually think it was Lavinia. Yeah, I mean, I think when we get into too deep, you're the one that, you know, usually asks the tougher questions. And I think that when we're talking about these cases, you know, we get several different people, whether it's the person that was murdered, whether it's somebody that they knew. But these people, there's certain things they want out. There's certain things they don't want out. Now, when we do Scarycast and we're talking about the Bigfoot and all the paranormal things there, we don't have this much trouble. And the only time we do have this kind of trouble is when we get into some really deep stuff, because as we both know, that rabbit hole goes deep. And when we start getting into that really touchy stuff, it cuts you out every time. And I don't think it's just one person that does it or one entity. I think it depends on what we're talking about and who's involved. And I think.
Well put. I agree. I think it just kind of depends. But I'll tell you what, whoever wanted to stop me from talking tonight, they didn't win.
No,
and
we kept on going.
And we are going to get Lavinia Fisher in whatever form she's in. Lavinia Fisher is going to be talking. We're going to have Chris next week. And I'm telling you, this is unbelievable. I mean, this is what we're about. This is what Murder 123 is about. It's about people, places, things, and it's also about our contact with them from beyond. And that's
absolutely
the way it is.
Absolutely.
Tony?
What I like that we do is we dig a little deeper than most, and we connect a lot of dots and a lot of the circumstantial stuff, like Robin was talking about a while ago. We connect all of that to give the audience a little bit broader, more level, and I think
we look at it different. Like, we don't just pick one side and go with that.
No.
We look at it from all different sides.
we have to follow the evidence. Wherever the evidence goes, that's where we go. And that's what you do, what good investigators do is you can't be biased. You got to, okay, it's black or it's white. It happened or it didn't happen. Or they found the bodies or they didn't find bodies. Or they put a naval base there or they didn't put, you know. I mean, so when you start stacking up the circumstantial evidence about what happened to Lavinia Fisher, then you're there's some people that definitely did some nefarious things out of greed.
Well, and what I like about us is, I mean, yeah, we dig deeper, I think, but we get into the person's mindset.
Yes.
And then that leads us to even more questions, and then we turn around and we take it even further. And we say, okay, this may have been what has happened, but what about if it was this, this, or this? So we get it from different angles. I mean, you can't make,
yes,
you know, your own opinion if you don't look at it from all the different ways.
Yes, you have to do that. You have to look at every option.
Absolutely, you do. And you know, that's the one thing that I love about Murder 123. We talk about people. We hypothesize, but then we have people that have enough psychic ability to really make this thing work. I mean, you know,
yeah.
And I think about, I know this is weird, but I think about Murder 123 all week. And I can't thank Tony. I can't thank Robin. I can't thank Devin, who's on special assignment tonight. I cannot thank all of you enough to make sure that we are uncovering things that other people will not uncover. I mean, here's the fact. I'm going to scare everybody. You know, we like go into the heart and the mind, and we go into the psychic thing of everybody.
Well, and I think we need to make sure people understand that when we get these spirits that come in, you know, that's kind of just an extra added bonus because there's no way to predict if they're going to or not. We don't have any control over it. We can ask who are blue in the face, and if they don't want to, they're not going to. So
that's
every
correct.
Time we have these shows, it's like, you know, we don't know going into it. So we get as excited about these shows as everybody else because we don't know what's going to happen. And quite honestly, when we all get together, we can get, you know, having a pretty good time and nobody knows what's going to happen. But I mean, as far as, you know, what
correct.
Comes in to talk, what comes in to give us any information, we don't know. If we get lucky, they come in. If they want to stay quiet, then they do. You know, it's not like we have it set up and rehearsed ahead of time where we say, okay, this one will be here. You know, Lavinia will be there. We don't know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We have a hard enough time getting ourselves ready, let alone anybody else. But
oh, Robin, you have perfectly timed yourself and said the correct thing. We do our best to even just get ourselves there, and we make ourselves there. And it's like, you know, what do we do? You know, I mean, I know everyone will say, Dr. John, you sound like you're not prepared. Well, I've been doing this for 7 hours today. And, it's, you know,
oh,
what
geez.
More can I say? You know, it's great.
Well, and John, you've been at my house, and Tony, hopefully you'll be at my house. Okay, my house is a crazy house on a good day, and that's when it's quiet. You know, before things go absolutely bonkers and the Bigfoots are letting the puppies out of the pen and we see one carrying one across the yard or they're coming up on the porch and stealing cat food or the spirits are running up and down the steps, as John has seen many times. You never know what's going to go on here. So when we plan to do anything, know we go into it with a pure heart, knowing that we're really going to try to do that, but anything can go on here. And I think when we get on the air, it just kind of carries into the crazy town that way.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And what I can say is one of the times that I was at Robin's house, everyone was in the living room. And then I heard something run down the stairs. And I ran and ran as quickly as I could, and nothing there that you could see. So, I mean, you know,
well,
things do happen.
This was, yeah, and we had, you know, when we were at the Comic-Con and we were doing Murder 123 this weekend, we also did a talk on the Bigfoot, and we had somebody who's also a very dear friend and part of our hominology team, William Henry, joined us and was speaking. Well, William is from Tennessee, so he came back to our house on Saturday night, and it was his first time he'd ever stayed here. And
how lucky was he?
Oh my gosh, he got out of the car, and the Bigfoots are screaming and hollering across the road and hooting and hollering and snapping branches. So he thought that was really cool. And of course, then we're sitting in the living room, and they're running around the yard, and every now and then you'd catch a glimpse of one here or one there. So that was good. He goes to go to bed, and I told him, I said, you know, we've got spirits in the house. There's an older man. There's also a young girl. You know, it's a little girl. Nobody's going to hurt you. They're not aggressive, but they are playful. You know, he's laying in bed. Now, whether it was from the Bigfoots, whether it was from the spirits, he was laying in bed. He said the whole bed raised up and vibrated. He thought it was an earthquake. And he's like, what is going on? Nothing else is shaking but this bed. And there was nothing in there with him, not a thing. So he had quite the eventful time here, and he was only here overnight. We went out to eat in the morning, and then he headed on back home because he had stuff to do. But, you know, it's never a dull moment here. It just never is. And it doesn't matter if it's this house because it just happens wherever I go. So, you know, you just get used to it.
Well, Robin, we're certainly lucky to have you with us and as part of the Murder 123 team. I mean, it's unbelievable because, you know, you have great insight. You get, okay,
I'm sorry,
I'm going to go here. You get to talk to Bigfoot. You get to talk to entities that we are not fortunate to be able to do, and you give us great insight.
Well, thank you. I love it. You guys have been such a blessing to me and so welcoming. And, you know, I just enjoy it so much. I mean, you know, we met accidentally, John and I did, and he's turned out to be just one of my dearest, closest, best friends. And then he introduced me to Tony, who I absolutely love, and I feel like I've really bonded with Tony as well. So it just works out really great. You know, sometimes even if you're not looking for anything, things turn out better than you thought they could. So it works.
They always happen for a reason. They put, you know,
absolutely.
The universe puts people together for.
Yep.
They do. And you know, it was really funny. I got to say this. It's like Tony had come on as a guest. And then I called him up the next day. I said, Tony, you have to be part of our crew. He said, good. That
yep.
was all
oh,
you said, Tony.
It.
Tony, if you don't
yep.
remember,
we
you said,
so much
good.
Fun
that's
Tony.
Great.
Yeah.
And you know.
Well,
yeah, it's
and
great.
We went to the Tennessee. We went to the Tennessee conference, and I knew he was coming, but I hadn't. I mean, I'd seen his picture, and I talked to him on air and off air, but I hadn't actually seen him yet. And I finally saw him there, and I was like, "Oh my God, get over here! I have to hug you." Like anybody who knows me knows I'm a hugger anyway, but I was like, "Tony, I have to hug you."
Absolutely. And, let me ask you a technical question, Robin. Where that entities move from one location to the other. Are
right.
they using, do you think they're using like a wormhole type thing? And I know that sounds kind of weird, but I mean, stuff like that. I don't know how they do it. I know they can do it, but whether they're manipulating.
You know, it's all, yeah, and I don't, I mean, I'm certainly, you know, not going to be able to say conclusively this is what it is. My own opinion is that because they are so good at pulling energy to do what they want to do, they basically do. I mean, the Bigfoots go from place to place in portals. And whether you call it a wormhole, you call it a portal or whatever, it's basically the same
right,
thing as
right.
far as I'm concerned.
Right,
because
right.
And there's some that don't have enough energy to pull it, and then they end up stuck in the same place they're at.
Right.
Where I've been in houses where they can't leave that house. And it's just that they don't know how. They can't pull enough energy to be able to do what they want to do. But then I've been in other places where you go and they're in somebody's house and then you go home and they followed you home. And the only thing I can attribute it to is the Bigfoots do a lot of the same thing. And I physically have watched them go in and out of portals. So, you know, that to me is a physical proof that I personally needed to know that's what they do. And I would imagine it's maybe not the exact same type of portal, but it's basically the same synopsis with them. But it's all energy-based driven.
And that makes a lot of sense because, you know, a lot of times before you get activity, you know, your meters will start pegging or you'll have some sort of energy spike.
Yeah. And it's like when they're around, you notice it gets really cold.
Yeah.
They pull that energy out, and they pull that energy out, and it makes it cold.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And until somebody's experienced that, I mean, that's odd the first time or two that happens because your logical mind goes, this can't be happening. There's no logical explanation
yeah.
for this, but there it is. You know, you're physically interacting with it, and you're going, wow, you know.
Well, you know, we went to the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, and a very special friend of mine, she's just a sweetheart, had rent us this beautiful home in the woods so that we could all meet and visit and be together and just hang out. So we all had our own room, and I'd go down to my room, and it had a ceiling fan in it. And we knew that there was a little girl that was there, or at least a younger girl. And we had a ghost box that a friend of ours had there, and she was talking to Jan. And then an older gentleman came in and kind of ran her off. But I knew she was around still. And we had had different things that had went on the whole time we were there. And we also knew the Bigfoots were there, too, because I had seen two of them outside the window, and William Henry was there. And he was talking to me, and I have glasses on, and he looked in my glasses, and he saw the reflection of them in my glasses. And he said, oh, my God, you just saw Bigfoots. And I said, yeah, they're right there in the window. And where my bedroom was, in the window was there. They had come up by that window. So I'm in there, and I'm packing. And they had told me during the day, they said they did not want me to go home. And every time I try to get things ready to go back home, something bizarre would happen. Things would get knocked off the table. Car doors would lock. I mean, you name it, crazy stuff was going on. So I get ready to go, and there's this ceiling fan, and it has the chains on it hanging down from it. Now, that ceiling fan had been going for 3 days, and those chains never moved. So it wasn't because of the wind from the paddle.
Right.
It was slow to begin with, but the chains never moved. And they kept mind speaking with me, the Bigfoots did, telling me they didn't want me to go. You need to stay here. You need to stay here. And I said, no, I got to go back. So I'm trying to get my stuff in the suitcase, and I finally get it done. I zip up the suitcase. I turn around, and the chains on that ceiling fan were going so hard, they entangled themselves in the globes with the light. It was insane,
wow.
And I'm standing there, and I'm looking at it, and it got so cold in that room. And these chains are just wildly flying all over. And I'm sitting there, and it didn't upset me, didn't scare me. And I was just like, well, guys, I'm not going. I still have to go. You know, I mean, no matter what you do, I still have to go. And it dawned on me I'd left something I needed in the suitcase. So I put the suitcase back and unzipped it. As soon as I unzipped that suitcase, those chains stopped and went back in a stationary position and did not move. I got something, the thing that I needed out of my suitcase, which was my jacket, and I zipped it back up, and those things just went crazy, and they were all over the place.
Huh.
I mean, you know, it was just crazy. You know, and I think I just sat there looking at it like I was standing right under it watching it. You know, I never felt threatened.
That goes back to what we were talking about earlier, that whether it's lights or whether it's maybe a wrap on the wall or something, they don't do that to scare you. They do it to get your attention.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
You,
I mean, I've had the Bigfoot for years come up and pound on the house at night, and they weren't doing it to threaten me. They weren't doing it to scare me. They wanted me to come outside. And the one group that I had in Michigan, and I have some of them that have come here in South Carolina, but the group there, they went 2 o'clock in the morning, and they would pound and pound and pound. And if I slept through them knocking on my window, my bedroom window or the wall, they would go to my kids' rooms and do it. My kids would come and wake me up, and they'd be like, Mom, we have school tomorrow. Will you just go outside? Just go outside because they'll quit pounding on the house. And I was like, you guys don't have a problem sending your mom out in the dark. There's no floodlights. There's no nothing. So you can get a few hours of shut-eye. And I would go outside, and they would get all nice and quiet, and they were fine with me. Now, I don't recommend people doing that. I mean, the group I had there was really such a loving, mellow group that I was never fearful. But I would never tell anybody to do it because, really, it was the dumbest thing I ever did because I could have gotten really hurt. But they were wonderful with that group. Like I said, I don't tell people the rule to do that. You know, you don't want to leave and move away from that door frame where anybody can cut you off from your house. You know, you stay in the, I tell people, stay in the door frame. You know, if you want to look out, whatever, don't go past the door because you don't want anything where they can get behind you and cut you off. I mean, just to be safe. But I did this all the time. I mean, that was my normal nightly thing. You know, and there was a couple times, like, I was so tired. It was like midnight. I was like, guys, this is it. If you want to see me now, is it, or, you know, or whatever. And I would call for them, and it wouldn't take them very long, and they would show up. I mean, it sounded like a bunch of freight trains coming through the woods, but they would show up.
Wow.
Yeah, they do. They knock on the walls. And the spirits do the same thing. We've had it several times, you know, where they'll come and pound on the door. Pat and I were laying in bed watching a movie one night, and we were the only ones here. And it was a loud knock on our bedroom door. And I looked at Pat, and I went, you get to answer this one. I'll do the tall, hairy people. This one's all you, buddy. Go for it.
And he opened the door.
And we had one of those, you know, those, what are they called, Roombas?
Yes.
We had one, and the battery on it just was, it didn't work. And we had to order another one. The thing had not ran in months. And it was one of those things I kept forgetting to order the battery. And so when that knocked, Pat got up and went to the bedroom door and opened it. And here is this Roomba running and butting into the door. And after he opened the door, it just backed up and went off into another room. And then it quit running again. And it never worked again until we got a new battery. Oh, yeah. It was that one was creepy. I mean, that one was like, oh, my God.
Wow. But again, this brings home the point that people need to understand a lot of times when they're making noises, it's just to get your attention to try to communicate with you. It's not to be.
Yeah, not everything is a threat.
No, I've been doing this for about 15 years. You know, I've only felt kind of threatened maybe two or three times. I've been in places where things tried to represent themselves as something they were not, but they were just blustering, just bravado. But most of the time, 95% of the time, if they make a noise or they move something, it's because they want to communicate. You know, they want your attention.
Yeah, it takes a lot of energy for them to do that. So if they're going to do it, they do it for a reason. And I think people need to realize that just because they don't understand it doesn't mean it's aggressive. And we go through the same thing with the Bigfoot when we go and talk to people about them, because are there bad ones? Absolutely. Are there good ones? Absolutely. But not everything is an act of violence.
Yes. And it's like with the entities, you know, if they were, some of them are pranks, or some of them will do a little something, you know, a prank with you. But if they were trying to really scare you or really do something to you, they'd kick you in the seat of the pants or something, watch you run, you know?
Yeah.
So whenever they're doing something, you know, I've seen books come out of fly across the room. I've seen, you know, they were trying to scare me. But I held my ground and everything settled down. But most of the time, if something moves, pull that to the recorder, and engage in a conversation like what we're doing. And most of the time, they want to tell the story. They have something they want to tell you.
Yeah.
I'm hoping at some point one of them says, inside the wall, there's a lot of money hidden. I hid that money just so you can find it.
That's great.
I keep waiting for that one. They told me a lot of things, and not that. Try talking to leprechauns. You don't get any money from them either.
Elemental.
And yes, they exist.
Do you not, Robin?
I have a big interest.
No, I wish.
I have a big interest.
Yeah, the elementals are pretty cool.
Do you think we could run an EVP session sometime? I'm actually going to try to do that this winter because I'm a big believer in wood spirits. You know, I mean, there's something
there.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Sure.
Definitely.
All right, Tony, here's what we'll do. Let's make the first Monday of February our EVP with you. How's that?
Sure. Great with me.
And put that live on the on our show, and we'll do it the first Monday on February. That'd be perfect.
I mean, this would be a great show because, I mean, the courthouse I really don't tell them how much activity is there, but there's a lot of people. I mean, you got to figure it's 92 years old this year. And that building was standing during the Cold Wars. The building, and within just a few blocks, if it's that much, where the old courthouse were, you had shootouts on the lawn. You had all this activity. You had from the courthouse. If I take you to the roof of the courthouse and the murders I was telling you about tonight, you could take a slingshot and hit them. I mean, so you have all of this energy that's been, you know, released in this small area. It's unbelievable.
Well, I would say, and I think Robin would agree with me, this is not exactly a small area. This is a gigantic psychic area of...
This rabbit hole gets really deep, and it's got tunnels that veer off all over the place.
And whenever we get there, I'll tell you some more stories, or I'll tell you because I don't want to. And I'm not saying it would scare them, but I wouldn't want anybody that worked there to really make them uneasy. But I can tell you that they're very respectful. I mean, they're way more active when everybody's gone. It's like everybody's gone, it kind of reverts back to whatever time period is coming through that evening, or it could be the 40s, the 30s, the 50s, and there's somebody usually always active. And we have a little girl in the courtroom, and I will send you the clip if y'all want me to, about it's been a couple of years ago, this January, matter of fact. Two to three. And this little girl, we set an experiment with all in a ball. And, I'm filming it, and we have maybe a ghost box going. Yeah, we did. The EVP comes through before she moves the ball. I said, hey, you know, I have two females, because she seems to interact better with the females. And they asked for the ball. And then we get an unintelligible EVP. It sounds like yes or something. It's unintelligible. And all of a sudden, the ball gets slapped. It probably moves 2 to 3 inches. And you see it roll forward and roll back. Yeah. And so we'll be right in that area. I'm interested to see what Robin picks up on there.
Well, that'll be great.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, we have 60 seconds left in our show tonight, and I want to thank Robin McCray. I want to thank Tony Filosi and all of our co-hosts that weren't able to make us here tonight, and thank you so much. And we will talk to you next week on the one and only Murder 123.
Take care, and thanks
Take
everybody.
Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you, guys. Have a good evening.